Hi, I'm Ann Matthews.
And I'm Doran Greenwood, and you are listening to Civic Talk.
We're joining forces, combining our years of experience as journalists and government hacks, and now amateur podcasters, to bring you a podcast about the public services we use every day.
We want to pull back the curtain on how innovative public services are designed.
We'll talk to the policymakers and the service innovators about what inspires them.
So come take a peek inside the ivory tower with us.
Hello there, Anne.
Hi, Doran.
How are you doing?
I'm good. It's 2022. Yahoo!
Woohoo!
Yeah, and probably the most exciting thing for our podcast is recently we reached 500 downloads.
Yeah, that would be exciting if it were something more like 500,000 downloads. I'll even take an extra zero. 5,000 would be great.
But we have to be proud of ourselves. Like, that's not so bad.
No, I'm giving myself a pat on the back and a pat on your back too.
Yes. So. And thank you to all our listeners who've stuck with us. And I think you're going to really love today's episode. This is an awesome interview with Zeina Kayat. And it's so good. We're bringing it to you in two parts.
All right, everybody. Here's part one.
For our listeners, you may not know who you are. You've had just such an interesting career. I love the job titles that you've had. You've had titles like Futurist, Innovation Sherpa in Chief. You are a professor at University of Toronto's Rotman School of Management in Health System Strategy. You've led health system innovation platforms at Mars. So what I want to know is, when Zeina was a little girl and you thought about the future, what did you think about? Because I know when I was a little girl, I was obsessed with the Jetsons and the idea that you'd be on, your dog would be with you in your cool home on the space station, and your little dog would be on a treadmill going so fast because you weren't obviously, you know, walking them in a park. So what did you think the future was when you were little?
Well, first, great to see you, Anne, and thanks for inviting me, and hi, everyone. That's a great question. I wish I reflected on that because I don't think I've ever been asked that. But, you know, I do use the one scene from the Jetsons in pretty much all of my talks about the future. It's the one where Judy tells Elroy, the little boy, you know, he's sick, and she's like, we better go see the doctor. So what do? The doctor's just on a TV screen in their living room. The doctor's wearing a mask, which I never quite understood, you know, but maybe they were ahead of their time back then for COVID. But, you know, in the 60s, you know, they imagined that you didn't need to be in the same time and place, you know, as your physician to get good care for your child. And here we are in 2021 and we're nowhere really near that. So I guess my only vision of the future would have been just things would feel like they would flow like butter, like friction would just be taken away. That was kind of what, maybe the essence of what I imagined the future would be.
And when you think about that butter imagery, are there certain things that you see now day to day, even with like raising your own family or in your own interactions, where you think, oh, this feels smooth like that?
It's so interesting you would ask. I'm just thinking about that today, you know, because of the pandemic. I have three children who are in three different schools. So we have three different types of communication readiness for, you know, overnight having to switch the channel. But we now get a Google Classroom every week for each of my kids, an email of everything that's due in the next week. I would have never known that before. It was just a black box of, is this happening or not? And they wouldn't tell me, and I wouldn't ask because I'm a busy working mom. I was just thinking, like, that's a byproduct of this pandemic, because the school board could never figure out how to do it themselves. They turned to this big, huge company called Google, who provides this whole suite of tools for free. And now there's an amazing communication tool that helps me be a little bit ahead of things, just in case my kids, you know, the odd time things fall through the crack with children. So that's an example that I was just reflecting on recently.
And when you think of healthcare, there's obvious winners in the innovation game during COVID. Obviously, things like virtual healthcare, and you know, when my mom and dad, who are both 88, have their doctor's appointments, they're either doing it through the phone or more likely video, which is fantastic. And my mom doesn't have to leave their apartment. But are there other things that you think like, wow, we have had sort of an accelerated curve forward, propelling us forward because of COVID?
Yeah. So I think, you know, what you described, you know, I talk about, we've known forever, just like Elroy and Judy back in the 60s, that care, good care can be agnostic to place. You don't need to be in the same place. I think the next level of that, though, is it can also be agnostic to time. Right. So sure, on the phone, and reminder that technology has been around a very long time. We just suddenly started using it during COVID, or video. You know, it is a lot better in many cases than, you know, taking a day off work, driving your mom, parking, waiting, all that stuff. But it doesn't need to be synchronous for most cases. And I don't think we're there yet, but in some cases we have. So that would mean maybe your mom just texts the doctor or emails, or you do it and it's asynchronous, and you can pretty much solve the answer in 3 or 4 of those texts, and that's it. You don't need the visit. Another area, though, that I've been reflecting on, again, just recently that exploded, is just kind of using data and intelligence to guide decisions in real time and to pivot in real time. Think of any other public health situation. Think of people with diabetes or mental health crises or cancer, where every citizen of the public knows the statistics every minute of the day. That happened with COVID, right? You could talk about it at the coffee shop. And we use that data to guide choices, sometimes by the hour, right, on this thing. Imagine if we had that level of visibility and transparency for the 8, 10, 15 other conditions that are just as devastating on the health of the population, right? And you know, so this ability, I think, just to know data in real time, to share it, to move it, and to act on it in way faster cycles than the old way, I think has been a bit of a revolution.
And when you think of examples of that, of moving data effectively, are there particular jurisdictions or organizations that you think are doing it really well?
I mean, I wouldn't say anywhere popped in Canada. Really, I think, you know, it fascinated me that we still use the fax machine as the mode of transmission of that data. So to get the volume to flow faster, we just hired more people to take the faxes literally off the machine and then transcribe them into a digitized data set. But the fact that we did that anyway is still pretty good. Whereas, you know, one of my students in my MBA program did an analysis of how Singapore turned on these kinds of things. So this country that, you know, just always is a few steps ahead, right, on modernization. You know, look at what they did compared to what we did. So for us to be able to very quickly turn on some pretty major public health interventions that before would have taken like a committee to have a task force, to have a study, to have a report, to have another report, to have another study, then do a conference about it. You know, we did contact tracing, you know, as wonky as it was. We had testing. So, you know, the ability to know to get tested, to get tested, to get the results, to communicate the results. Of course, the vaccination, you know, are you, aren't you, one dose, two dose, blah, blah, blah. We had 3 different systems, 3 different apps, 3 different people involved. It went faster or slower, you know. Whereas in Singapore, all of those experiences for their citizens were integrated into one single, you know, point of entry. It was either an app on a phone, or if you didn't have a phone, it was like a thing they wore on their wrist, like an RFID. So no matter what you did, it was all linked to one thing, you know? So that's an example like that I turned to that. Why didn't we do it that way here? We didn't because we're so fragmented.
And do you think that the future of healthcare for us to really move forward requires a much more integrated system?
So this word integrated system, I find everyone loves to use but then it's too huge. It's like back in the day, this word interoperability, you know, for one system to talk to another. So I don't think you need to go and take all the parts and integrate them to get the same result. you know, that would be amazing. But to me, it's not the fastest path to the same outcome. So the new way is we know what result we want for whoever, whatever population or whatever situation. You know, the constellation of players who are have a role in producing that result, just figure out how to work together and make it happen, right? Whether that's just a set of MOUs across those different, you know, silos, or whether they have to have something more formal. Usually the data has to connect across them at a minimum. But do you formally need to integrate? That would be nice. I'm not going to hold my breath, right? You know, in Ontario, we had 14 entire agencies for, I don't know, 20 years whose job it was to integrate the health system. And guess what? They're gone. They're folded. So if they couldn't figure it out and that was their only job they had to do, I don't think it's meant to really happen.
So as we sort of start to see the end of the COVID tunnel ahead of us, are there certain sort of early signals that you see in the healthcare system at large that get you excited?
A couple I'd say that has been consistent, and perhaps it's just, you know, because of my new role, I've joined probably the world's best and biggest digital health enabling company, Teladoc. So because of the suite of things we can do, the capabilities, I can have some very interesting conversations, you know, about what we could bring in Canadian healthcare with people. So I would say there is a pretty unanimous commitment and vision for two aspects of a better experience, both for patients and clinicians. One is this concept of like a digital front door, you know, that there can't only be one storefront to get into the healthcare system, like make an appointment with your doctor, show up in the ER or whatever, that there'll be one digital front door, which means that door can be anywhere. And then from there, you're routed a little bit more intelligently, right? Whereas today, we don't have that at all, but that's in the process of being built. And then the second part of that is then, the, you know, what I call the digital backbone. That, okay, once you come in the door, no matter what hallway you go down and whatever, you know, rooms you visit on that episode of your journey, the information will flow across those different parts. You know, there is a relentless commitment on finally creating that, which I'm pretty excited about.
When you talk about, you know, the hallways and the digital front door, where does trust fit into that with patients?
As you're accessing the services you need to maintain or restore your health, you know, you're not burdened with cobbling it all together, which is what we're asking. Like, oh yeah, you're really sick. Oh, and on top of it, stitch it all together, please, because there's no way we can get our act together, even though we're all part of the same payer, you know? So in that sense, I think the trust risks are, is more around, you know, is it going to be timely? Of course, is it going to be safe? Like, is the information going to go where it shouldn't go? Because, you know, love it or hate it, when something is in a manila folder paper chart, there's not as much risk that it could go anywhere. Now, of course, I think 20% of faxes don't even go to the desired number. They go to like CIBC or some place in Botswana. So anyway, so I think that's where the big trust issues are there. And then I think a trust that the quality of the experience and the care in whatever way you access it, whether that's through asynchronous texting, you know, with your clinician, a voice, a video, whatever, it, you know, is going to match, I don't think the real quality, but perhaps your perceived quality of the traditional, you know, visit-based paradigm.
Wow, Anne, Zaina is amazing. I can't stop listening to her. She has so many incredible insights into the future of healthcare.
Yeah, and she had so much to say that we decided to make this a two-part interview. So please listen to the next episode as well with Zaina Kayat.
All right, everybody, thank you for tuning in to Civic Talk.